This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer.
Back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. Sam Webb, Mr. Ira Weintraub on the other side, and the MGO Blog Roundtable crew is in the stream. I was about to say in the building. They're in the proverbial building.
We're in some building.
The MGO Blog Roundtable, they join us on StreamYard, so you're seeing us on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter, as you're also listening to us here on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA. Joining us as they do every single week, starting off first, the man that studied it all over at MGO Blog. His name is Brian Cook. Brian, good morning. How are you?
My faith in everything is shaken.
Why is that, Brian? Is that?
Because LSU is telling me they don't buy players. What do I have to believe in?
Is that not a sign? I said this to Akeem Miskadeem. Miskadeem, when he was on yesterday. Every program in the country complains about NIL. Every single one. Even the ones that are doing it like you're not supposed to do it, even they are complaining about NIL. And to me, that's a perfect example of it, Brian.
Well, I mean, I think they thought they were going to get one of the Michigan State defensive tackle transfers, but I guess they get outbid, where it's like, step your game up.
Well, I thought they did get one of those defensive.
What is wrong with LSU's NIL?
They've already financed their children's hospital so they could pay for their quarterback. Like they might just be out of money, man. Like they've been soaking those guys for players for years.
Yeah, well, and they just wasted a Heisman season. They had the best offense in the country and they went 9-3 because their defense couldn't find their butt with two hands. And they can't get a defensive tackle out of the spring portal. What are we doing here?
I think we'll get into talking about some of the Michigan's portal pursuits moving forward. But that's, for instance, just to give you an example, Terrence Brooks is leaving a team that had two high round draft picks on the defensive line. It was like, look at the way the scheme wise that we're playing down here. And they're asking and exposing you to all this man coverage. And it's really about the offense. They do defense so they can get back to offense. That's how a lot of the teams in the South kind of treat defensive football. I think LSU was like that under Brian Kelly. But Craig Ross, how are you this morning?
I'm doing good. You guys will discover as you get older, one of the things that happens is your butt begins to disappear. I no longer have a butt, so I can't find mine with two hands because it doesn't exist anymore. That's what happens.
We call that detailer upshawing. Detailer upshawification.
You learning about Craig Ross's ass this morning? How about that?
It's gone. I don't have one anymore.
Seth Fisher, how are you doing this morning?
Oh man, I've got a Groves High School graduate going to the University of Michigan to play football. And we might even have two.
Maybe two.
You listen to the Sparty's freaking out online right now, and it's like the worst thing in the world that somebody transfers from Michigan State to Michigan, which is the largest group of transfers in the Big Ten. If you just look at like students, more people transfer from Michigan State to Michigan than any other school to any other school in the Big Ten.
It's kind of clever how they're doing it if they pull it off.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So what they're going to do, because he was an early enrollee. We're talking about Jaden Mangum for folks who weren't picking up the Michigan State junior to be He is transferring from the Spartans. There, I think they're a little in their feelings because he did it like right before the signing period, or the portal period closed, portal window closed, and he's gonna be able to graduate in the fall, or that's how he's tracking anyway. So he would lose credits in transfer ordinarily at Michigan. Well, what they decided they could do, or they figured out they can do, is have him finish his Michigan State degree here.
Yeah.
So he could, I think he'd have to take a class or two, Michigan State class or two here in the summer. And then he could finish out his Michigan State degree in the fall and then be a Michigan grad student once it gets into the winter term if he didn't decide to go to the pros.
This is a special program that's been in place for 10 years in the state of Michigan, where there is a certain reciprocity between universities and where you're allowed to go and do that, and also certain credits transfer. I've talked about transfers for years, right? But like transferring within the state of Michigan's public schools is actually very easy because they've created this system to allow you to do that because they understood long ago that there are different programs at different universities, different reasons to go to different ones, and we're supposed to be friends. I don't know if they understand this part of Michigan State.
They shouldn't let them do it.
Part of being brothers is not just like, you know, it's not just playing basketball against each other outside. Part of being brothers is like, you know, going to each other's weddings and stuff. Like, we're supposed to be friends.
They want to screw the kid out. Think about that, fellas. Just absorb that for a minute. They want to screw the kid out of a degree because he wants to transfer to play football someplace else. You want to screw him out of a degree that he's actually earned. He actually went to the classes, right? And did well. Come on. At some point, you got to put down the fandom a little bit, right?
Their former players are in their feelings. That's what's so nuts about it. Like, they're getting on there. Like, they're mad.
Yeah, I've completely changed my mind about this because it's made Michigan State so angry. Like, I'm in now. Like, let's go. It's really telling because you see what happens when Roddy Gale transfers to Michigan. There's some grumbling, but Ohio State is secure enough in who they are and what they do that they're like, whatever. We'll live. He's not even that good, which is a fine and reasonable response. They're not like, how can we screw this kid out of a degree? So, I mean, there's a 35,000 post thread about the Connor Stallions scandal on the Red Cedar message board. And there's a bunch of Ohio State fans who are like, your guys are going to get it. But like, there's just a difference between those two fan bases. Like, Ohio State's response was like, we are going to pay everybody to come back. We are going to go so deep into NIL. We are not going to lose a football game. And Michigan State's response is just like, what is their response? They don't have one. And I think that they kind of know that they're doomed.
Yeah. I think you're right.
The whole offseason, people were talking about, Michigan's going to lose all their guys because they don't have NIL. And there was one Big Ten program that had an entire defensive line raided from their program, and it was Michigan State. And, you know, their savior, Matt Ishbia or whatever, is currently running the Suns into the ground. They have, like, their two big boosters are, like, the worst owners in the NBA. It's a good time to be a Michigan fan. Also, like, the long-term prognosis for Ohio State is not great. Did you hear about their commencement speech?
Yeah, well, a person committed suicide. Is that true?
Okay, that's a tragedy that I wasn't referring to. Their commencement speaker was like pitching Bitcoin during his commencement speech and was getting roundly booed. And
because the president is involved in Bitcoin,
their athletic director's main accomplishment was hiring Jimbo to A&M, which was not like a good move. He decides to pick the interim, like Chris Holtman's interim coach after Holtman gets fired over Dusty May. Like, they're trying, but it does feel like the leadership at Ohio State has declined in quality over the last couple of years.
Yeah, she'll see if that results, or if the result of that is a decline in performance on the field as well. I want to highlight, though, what you said there, Seth, about there being this relationship between in-state institutions, because someone asked the question, well, why don't they do that with every player that might have, you know, credits that are, they're close to, you know, close to graduating? Why can't every guy, why couldn't Terrence Shannon have just completed his Texas Tech degree here? Well, there isn't that same kind of relationship with other institutions that they have with.
No, this is a formal program that goes between the schools, that the schools had to sit down and set it up exactly how they wanted it to be and say, okay, these kinds of credits transfer, this specific class transfers to this class, we appreciate this thing. It was too hard for them to do it for every single school. Now, they could probably do it within the AAU. I don't know if there's a lot of push to do so, but it wouldn't be that difficult for them to set something up like that. We're getting into, like, you know, this is a completely academic stuff. When it gets to the athletic stuff, the reason why the athletic stuff has not changed how the academic stuff works is because no one really goes to the academics to say, can you make this work for us? They just make it work. Illinois wasn't going to, like, the provost and going, hey, do you know, can you change the way that we have credits transfer so that he can finish up there? They said, okay, look, this guy's going to make our basketball team this much better. Can you just make sure that he can finish his Texas Tech degree and move on? And they took one look, realized he was an honor student at Texas Tech. Not an honor student, not just like a, you know, for an athlete. He was like one of the better students at Texas Tech, period. And they said, fine, let's let him finish this off and do it. And that's one of the things that I've been frustrated about with Michigan, is that everyone else seems to have that figured out. You can look at the student and see whether he was a serious academic or not, whether he was taking it seriously or not. Shannon was taking it seriously. Love probably wasn't. They probably shouldn't have made him gone, especially after they didn't during the year before. But we're not asking for the moon here. I'm saying look at the individual students and make some exceptions, because it's going to help your university, and it's just going to hurt the student not to let them in.
Yeah. Well, this was something Dusty May talked about yesterday when he said, you know, we're going to make sure the kid can get into school first before into Michigan first, before we actually offer him a scholarship, that we weren't going to, like, offer him a scholarship and then figure out whether or not we could negotiate with the university to get him in. And so I think that was, you know, smart. And
very much,
you know, I don't know if this is something you want to talk about, Sam, at all, but Dusty May did have a press conference yesterday, day before, and it was quite remarkable again. And it's the thing, you know, usually on these press conferences, I always get the feeling like with coaches, even coaches I really like, and I tend to like coaches, you get the feeling that, okay, we're here, we got to do this, it's a part of our job. I didn't get, you know, this is a whole different game. This is like, we're here, oh yeah, we got a half hour. What? That's how, we got a half hour with the head coach, and then we're going to bring all the other assistants in, and they'll talk to you for, you know, as long as you want to talk to them too. And not only that, you're going to hear a minimum of coach speak. Mm-hmm. You're going to hear... Mm-hmm. exactly what we think is going on, to the extent that we can ethically say it. And so I came away with 17 pages of notes from, you know, from the press conference, and it with just, oh man, that, you know, that's interesting. And that's interesting. And it's
Dusty's a dude, man. That's, I mean, what you're saying is Dusty's a dude. I know he hasn't coached a game yet. People say breaks. Let him actually coach a game, and there is, you're right. But the fact that he's built the program already, the staff that he's put together, the roster that he's assembled, and that's the other thing that really comes across, Brian. I know we already touched on that point, but just how intentional they were in fitting these pieces together, really, really, it seems coherent. Just like, as Craig pointed out, now his plan, like, you really see the plan, which is not hard to come up with after what Juwan went through trying to get guys in. Okay, let's make sure we can get these guys in before they come in. Then the NIL plan, I have got to be an ace fundraiser And the dude is really beating the bushes in the way that he said he would at his introductory press conference.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when he was hired, the roster was like Will Cheddar. And like maybe a couple other guys will come home. And now it looks like this is a team that will contend to, you know, for buys in the Big Ten tournament. I don't know how good they're going to be because it's you're pulling guys together from a bunch of different schools. But I was also struck by the Dusty May press conference because what it sounded like to me is it sounded like either Nick Saban or Urban Meyer on TV. Because both of those guys, they get on TV and they start talking and you're like, it's immediately apparent why they're wildly successful football coaches. Because the things that they are saying are meaningful and they're not difficult to grasp. They communicate information quickly and efficiently. They're excellent teachers. And the it's kind of the offhanded things that Dusty May was saying in that press conference, like, oh yeah, I was familiar with Roddy Gale because I'd watched 6 or 7 Ohio State games over the course of last season, which is not something that schools that coaches do for teams that are not in their conference.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like this guy, just the only thing he does is basketball. He wakes up, it's basketball. He goes to sleep, it's basketball. And that's the kind of like obsession that I think you need to be successful in the modern day and age. Like everybody is complaining about like, oh, I don't have any work-life balance. Like, I gotta go in the portal. I gotta do all this stuff. I wish, you know, there was something that could like allow me to once in a while eat a bagel. And Dusty May doesn't care. Dusty May is like, this is what I want to do. I get up, it's basketball. I go to sleep, it's basketball. You could change what was allowed, and if I was not allowed to do more basketball, what am I going to do? I'm going to watch EuroLeague games. I'm going to find a set from Real Madrid. And I'm going to run it in my program, and I just I agree with Craig that like I know I think it was Sam, like you said, like he hasn't coached a game yet. I don't care that he hasn't coached a game. Like this is a home run hire. This is Beeline 2.0. Like this is. Just everything that has occurred since he has hired gives me the strongest confidence that this is going to be another very, very good era of Michigan basketball.
So Seth, I know you guys spend time, doing a lot of scouting and going back and watching film. So I want to get you guys' take on what all the coaches are saying. I ask each one of them about it. They keep referring to Dusty, as an offensive genius. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and they've all given specific examples of why they think that. As you watched him on film, because that's what they used to say about Beeline, right? And I'm riffing on Brian's calling them Beeline 2.0. Do you see, as you watch, you know, FAU film, do you see evidence of that? Do you see the reasons why other coaches are saying that about Dusty?
Well, yeah. First, I want to speak to something that Brian mentioned, that Dusty was watching Ohio State last year. He was probably watching them because he thought he was going to coach them this year.
No, he wasn't. He doesn't think he's going to coach Real Madrid.
I mean, when you looked at like who was going to have openings last year, I thought that he had to know that he would have been considered for that job. And I love to stick that knife in. He mentioned it. That's the thing about Dusty May. This press conference was so amazing because he answered all these questions that like normally just kind of float in the air. And we've been asking things like, okay, how are they going to play these two centers together? And he describes exactly why Golden can only play 25 minutes because they're going to play up tempo. And here's what we
actually.
Maybe Dusty was watching because he knew he was going to coach Michigan next year.
Yeah, it could be. All right. But anyway,
Michigan was, they had the radar up for Dusty.
Seth, I talked to Kyle Church and Akeem and Dusty about that, and they all say that they think it's plausible that Golden could move out to the four and they could play two bigs. So it's not a given. I mean, while
and that could be a matchup thing.
They haven't given up on that plausibility yet, because they think Golden can kid from Yale. Sorry, Wolf. The kid from Yale can handle the ball. He can pass it. And the question is, as you guys, both you and Brian have said, is what does his defense look like at the position? But remember, you've got the same problem with Sam Walters, who's 6'9", 6'10", who's going to have similar problems playing defense at that position. So they haven't given up on Danny Wolf moving out and playing together with Vlad. That isn't an impossibility, and Akeem and Kyle.
We can make a distinction there. I'm the difference mm-hmm. between, you know, what's your standard five-man lineup and your standard rotation versus what do you do in different games, right? There's lots of different lineup combinations out there. When we're talking about his offense, though, he mentioned it. He was the one who described this, that he likes to have two point guards out there. Not just two shoot. We were like, you know, playing this thing like, oh, two shooting guards. But when you look at exactly what he's doing, that's what he's doing. He's got multiple point guards. He never wants you to be able to take away your options with the ball. Whoever has the ball, he wants to make sure there's lots of different guys out there he never wants to get stuck. He never wants to get trapped. And the way that the team moves the ball, there were always just so many options. It is kind of like Beeline. Remember, Beeline had this whole like decision tree, right? And that's how their guards functioned, and that's why it was so hard to become a point guard in Michigan, because you had to memorize that decision tree, and it was like a programming thing, right? The way Dusty May seems to do this is he has everyone on the court, or most everyone on the court, be a decision maker. So they have different things that they can do, and then when you don't have the ball, there's places you can go, because everybody is a creator. Everybody has an idea where everybody else on the court is, and you know, there's the ball can't get stuck. Everyone knows what to do with it, and I think, you know, it's not just I think Dusty May would agree with this. I don't think it's his quote brilliance. I think he relies on his players' brilliance. He recruits the kinds of players who know how to keep the ball moving and not get stuck in traps, and that's why it looks genius.
Yeah, but that requires a lot of teaching, man. A lot of teaching.
Yeah.
In order to get them to internalize that in a way where they aren't on the court thinking, where they can just react. That was the thing about Beeline. I mean, you know, it made it really hard for a freshman to come in, because there was so much to absorb before they can get out there and not think. Just be out there and react. And that's what Dusty made this point. You know, to give players the kind of freedom that they have on the court. You know, I remember when I initially mentioned his name, you know, Harrison thought his offense is really kind of basic. You know, it's just it's relying on not calling many sets, just trying to out athlete people. No, there are rules for every guy at every position, how they play. But in order to get them to be able to go out and adapt every game to how teams are playing them, man, you got to coach the heck. You got to have smart guys, to your point. High IQ guys, to your point, Seth. But it's not like they're just smart. Man, you got to teach them a whole lot of basketball. And that's what he said at one of the press conferences. Like, you know, there's a lot of teaching. That's why I got to hire great teachers. There's a lot for them to absorb, to play the way that we want to play. And then the other piece, Craig, that really stuck out to me. I think it was you who mentioned defense. Mm-hmm. He said, I want coaches who compliment me.
Yeah.
Right. So he has all this offensive genius, and not to say he doesn't have a defensive philosophy, but if there's a place that maybe he needed to be complimented most, it was on that side of the ball. He didn't just go get one defensive guy and Mike Boynton, who that is. Yeah. Mike said, that is my forte, my claim to fame, so to speak, is how I get after it on a defensive end. Same thing with Justin Joyner.
Yeah.
You know, you talk about what his strong suits are as an assistant. He was the defensive coordinator at St. Mary's. Dusty's loading up on defensive acumen to compliment him in ways he needs to be complimented.
Well, and the presser, when they asked him about why he picked coaches, he had like a complete taxonomy of reasons, you know, starting with, how do we get along? Is it going to be fun in practices for the kids? And do I find coaches that can complement my own particular skill set? And I asked Akeem about, why he came to Ann Arbor. He's been at Florida, Georgia. He's been in the South. And he said, Dusty May, because he's, quote, what's the phrase? A relentless learner. He's a relentless learner about basketball. And he felt like, I want to be around him because I want to expand my horizons as a coach and become the best coach I can.
That's what Mike Boynton said. Mike Boynton said the same thing. Like, I want to be around this dude.
Yeah.
To learn from him.
Right. And when I was done with the presser, I was walking out to my car in the parking lot, and Dusty was coming the other way, coming back into the Chrysler. And I started to talk to him, and I realized he was listening to a podcast. He had his earphones on, walking across the parking lot, listening to a podcast. So this whole noise about him, you know, not wasting a second, you know, I think is probably.
Dude, I said this to Akeem in the interview yesterday. One thing you'll find about Dusty is he is and Brian, you mentioned it. He communicates a lot of information, and it's not like he uses a whole lot of time and words. I mean, the brevity of the communication is I think a sign of, man, this dude really is a great communicator and says a lot without saying a lot. If you get my meaning there, you talk to him on the phone and you get a lot in 2 or 3 minutes and the conversation is over, but you've gotten what it'd take like other coaches 20 minutes to give you.
Yeah.
He communicates that way. That's how he's able to, you know, to move so efficiently throughout his day. He can communicate very well, but do so while being concise at the same time. And I imagine that's an asset as he's coaching as well.
Well, I mean, here's a small example of that, Sam. Yesterday, he was asked about money, NIL, whatever you want to call it, to players. And his quote was, "We would like our players to be taken care of as well as anyone in the country. Right now, that's not feasible." Right? I mean, when do we ever hear anything like that? He's just telling you, okay.
And listen, that dude has raised way more money than Juwan had. I'm just telling you. But he's saying, hey, it's not enough. Not enough to be where we want to be ultimately.
Right.
But even if one, it is better than what it used to be.
In two sentences, he told you the whole deal. You know exactly what's going on and what's happening. And that's, you know, the other thing that is, and I talked to Alejandro about it a bit, and it's just has an unusual feel. This press conference had a very unusual feel in that usually it's like, okay, here we are, we're the coaches, and there you are, you're the media guys. And this conference was, no, we're all the same guys. You got your jobs, we got ours. We want to be on the same side.
Well, welcome to the party. I just feel like, yeah, see now, y'all are as excited as I was, but here's what I want you to do now. Maybe you do this after, man, calm me down. Because I just get more excited every day, every time I hear him talk.
Yeah.
And, you know, I got my guy Daniel Horton in my ear saying, man, you need to calm down. You need to relax. Yeah. You're getting too ahead of yourself. I mean, let him coach a game for, okay, Daniel, I hear you. But, you know, what should I be nervous about? Because, fellas, and I think we talked about this last week, I look around this Big Ten, and Dusty, he repeated this. We're going to compete right now. We're going to contend right now, even if it's not at the Final Four level. I don't know. But I absolutely think that with what he's put together, both on the court and with his staff, that we should be talking about, yeah, he's right. Michigan is going to be a factor in the Big Ten race. Am I getting too far ahead of myself with that?
Well, no, they're definitely going to be a factor. Like, who else is looking like they're going to be like a top-end team next year? There's not really a clear, okay, this is the team you got to beat next year, because Zach Edey's out at Purdue. There's a bunch of changes at Illinois. You know, Michigan State is sort of standing pat with a team that barely made the tournament a year ago. There's four new teams. I don't really know what to make of them yet.
They're Pac-10 teams or Pac-12 teams. So,
Oregon
and UCLA will be decent. Like, Oregon had a ton of injuries last year, so I don't know if they should be better than they were a year ago. But I'm not looking at any of these teams and being like, oh yeah, this is clearly a team that's clearly better than Michigan. The question for Michigan is just like, how will the pieces come together? But I mean, you look at Riley Gale, he's going to be a junior. He's a top 50 recruit. And I think if he shot 35% from three last year, he'd be in the NBA. Like, he has a ton of rim pressure. He's a guy who's 6'4". You have a Jr. and Trey Donaldson, who was splitting time with a five-star recruit on the number four team in KenPom. You have Reuben Jones, who's like a quintessential glue guy. Namari Burnett did pretty well in awkward circumstances last year. You know, your center pairing of Golden and Wolf is probably the best in the Big Ten. Like, I think
it probably will be. Oregon's
guys. I haven't checked back. I don't know about
Oregon. Those guys just block shots. They don't play basketball. and then the four is really the question, right? Because you have Cheddar and you have Sam Walters, both of whom were hugely efficient offensive players last year, but they played about 30% of their team's minutes for reasons related to their defense. And I don't think that's going to be a huge problem. But like, if that's like the big problem, that's like the issue, mm-hmm. is like your four spot might not be that good defensively, and you have some pretty good defenders who can check up there if you're really getting burned. Like, this looks like a team that can really play. And it's got multiple point guards. It's got a lot of guard depth. I think Justin Pippen is going to come in, or maybe Lorenzo Kason, and give, you know, good 10, 15 minutes as a freshman. So they're looking for one more piece. I'm not exactly sure what that is, but it does look like a guy who can play the three and the four would be it. I know Connie Ruth is still out there, but he's taking a visit to Louisville this weekend, and that combined with his tweet where he's like, I'm open, it's kind of like, that doesn't seem good. But we'll see. There's a kid who decommitted from St. Mary's, but St. Mary's probably isn't letting him out of his letter of intent right now, which is weird, because like, if you're in college now, you can go. The NCAA is like, we can't do anything about it, but apparently the letter of intent is still a thing that matters, which is like, why is anyone signing that? There's no reason to sign it.
Yeah Kanai Roos didn't sign his. That was one of the deals. Not that Michigan wouldn't have let him out, I'm sure they would have, but let me back give myself a little slack here. As Nuber says, Sam, always way too optimistic for Michigan sports. I'm not believing the hype that they're going to be a Final Four contender. But I do think they're going to factor in this Big Ten race. That says as much about the Big Ten as it does them, with them flipping the roster completely over. But I'm looking around the Big Ten, and I'm just not intimidated at all. I think they have what they need to go and be a factor right now. So it's not like I'm buying hook, line, and sinker everything that they say, but everything that I've heard and what he's done since he's been here backs up what I thought before they hired him, backs up what I thought from the moment I heard they're keeping an eye on Dusty May. Yeah, that's, and I hear from other coaches. So that's the other thing. I use coaches as a guide, and talking to other coaches, they're not, this is a real dude. This is a real, real dude. And I think we're seeing that right now, even if it's just in a press conference.
I mean, as far as the roster that he built, other than you know, getting a superstar, and obviously he had one and couldn't get him in, but other than that, like, this is an ideal roster that he built. As far as like where we started, as Brian said, it was just with Cheddar, right? And then he figured out where everyone can go, and the roster is almost complete, and it looks pretty much exactly what you wanted to get. I was in our chat, I was calling it the Dianu roster. It would have been sufficient. He could have, like, if, and every one of these guys has like one fault that keeps him out of the NBA, right? So Trey Donaldson has his turnovers. Roddy Gale was not a good shooter last year. Reuben Jones can't finish. You know, Vlad Golden is, you know, he has to play drop coverage. Like, everyone's got their thing, right? So it's all going to be about how they mitigate it. Now, Dusty May was already very obvious. It's very obviously what each guy has to work on, and college basketball players get better. So as Brian mentioned, you know, if one of these things trip, right, Roddy Gale could shoot again. He had a broken wrist last year, so maybe he'll be fine, right? That's where you get a superstar, and that's where you start bending basketball to your will, as opposed to just trying to play. You know, I think this is a very good team basketball, but they're going to run into teams that just have somebody who breaks the game. That's how basketball is. And I think their ceiling, once they get going, I think you're going to have to be a little patient at the beginning of the season when there's going to be some turnovers, there's going to be getting to know each other, there's going to be learning the system. But you know, even deep in the season, I think they're going to run into teams that just have that player. And maybe not necessarily in the Big Ten, but, you know, I'm not getting my hopes up for like a 3 seed or anything. I think 6 seed, compete in the Big Ten, you know, get a couple good wins, beat State. I think that would be a great season this year.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm a little more sanguine, I think, than Sam about this, but the, you know, I'm optimistic. But, you know, you never can tell in basketball until you see the team on the court and how the court and how they fit together. Now, the really big thing for me is perhaps Reuben Jones, is that you've got a guy who is the grease in the system. That guy will play any position. He'll play defense. And when you got a guy like that, the rest of your team tends to cohese. And so I'm, you know, I'm optimistic, but still you got, what, 7 transfers? And I think it was Dusty at the press conference who said, anything more than 7 and you sort of reached a critical limit. Teams with more than 7 transfers don't do well. They tend to implode. Now, on the other hand, that's something he's aware of from the get-go, and he's trying to pull together guys who may not, implode. But I'm almost where Sam is at. Let me put it that way. I think I'm very, very optimistic about what he's done, and I think the odds are good. I don't think we're going to be 8-24. One other thing that Dusty said that was, I thought, really interesting. He said, I don't think it's good enough for our team just to go out every night and have the attitude that we're going to win. And I thought, well, I don't know, seems good enough to me. But he said, we also have to be fun. Remember he said that?
Yeah,
and I thought, different. Now that is a strange one. And I love it, of course. He goes, no, we have to be playing interesting and fun basketball aside from winning games.
I mean,
did that hit you too, Sam?
I understand why coaches feel this way, getting to know a lot of them. Look, what does it matter how it looks
right.
if I win? You know, if I win ugly, as long as I win, the objective is to win the game, right? So I don't care if it's entertaining. The bottom line is all that matters. And right. and Dusty very plainly said that is not the case, at least with him.
Right.
We are
going to love that. God, who wants to watch Rutgers basketball?
He sounds right? like or historical he sounds like us. His, like, what podcast was he listening to? he's answering the same questions we're talking. Like he was talking about Reuben Jones, which is my boy, by the way. I'm calling this Reuben Jones. I'm gonna be the number one Reuben Jones fan here. He was talking about him, and he's just like, yeah, I got him because I hated playing against him. And we're like, yeah, that's kind of exactly what we were looking at, right? Like, when we saw him, that's kind of one of the things I think we even said. And now he's talking about he wants to be Red Berenson too. I'm like, okay, yeah. I mean, it sounds like
here's the thing. I mean, listen, and Guy D Original on YouTube says too many teams play like Loyola Marymount. That's why you go and hire some defensive guys as well to make sure to keep your balance. You want to be entertaining, but not at the expense of, hey, we're just going to be, you know, run and gun and, you know, just loaf it on defense so we can get back over to the other end of the floor. That's not what this is going to be. So, we have to wait to see it for it to play out. For those who think I'm overly optimistic about Michigan, though, I'll come back to what I said before and what you guys and Brian, you spoke to. And you look around the Big Ten, and I'm sorry. You tell Michigan State ain't what it used to be. Ohio State breaking in a new coach. You know, we went over all the details here of reasons why you shouldn't be so intimidated about how this team is going to fare, at least in the Big Ten race. So, at any rate, we need to get to a break. Much more on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, The Ticket.
Clear on the radio.
Yes, go ahead, Craig.
I just wondered, remember the quote that he said that lots of former Michigan football players have reached out to him and actors. He said, football players and actors. I thought, well, what the heck?
Yeah, I mean, hear from Lucy Liu. I don't know.
I have no idea.
Alan Greer.
I don't know. But one of these days I'll ask him what actors have reached out to talk to him. But I thought that was pretty interesting.
Maybe it was Russell Crowe. Remember, he used to be a Michigan fan.
Yeah, maybe it was.
Yeah, Russell. For a minute.
he was Lloyd Carr's buddy, right?
And what was his name? Vern Troyer, but I think he's deceased now, right?
Away. Yeah, he used to follow me on Twitter before he passed away.
Is that right?
Scott, when will we know if Elijah Melendez flipped from Miami? It's going to be a minute. I think Wink and Brian Jean-Marie will be down at his school next week. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's a sign or a signal that he's about to flip, but I think it is a sign that they're still very, very much in that race. And I don't think as much as people might be a little pessimistic based on Miami spending habits as far as NIL is concerned. I mean, you know, he's looking around under, I won't call it threat from Miami, but they didn't want him to visit Michigan, and he did it anyway. I think that's a real sign that Michigan is very much a factor in that race. But I was curious, did you guys watch Terrence Brooks at all? You know, the corner from Texas.
I watched him last year against Washington.
Okay, so it's a good, listen, all right. I know you did.
I hear you, but
listen, we previewed the national championship game, and it stuck out to me so much that I went and put it in a post where Vance was talking about how Texas played. He's like, man, this is ridiculous. The scheming that they had in that game was abhorrent to him. And this is from a former Texas DC who is a Texas alum and watches every game. And so when he found out Terrence Brooks was looking at Michigan, he said he will fare much better at Michigan. There's just no question.
Is he in the portal?
He is in the portal.
Okay.
Michigan is trending toward a visit.
Oh, really?
A visit seems likely at this point. At least that's the word from his dad. But, you know, Van said that the biggest problem for them, the pressure they put on their corners is unrelenting. Like, you know, he's not a guy talking about Terrence Brooks. He's a bigger corner, mm-hmm. 205, 210 pounds, probably needs to be closer to 205. But he's not a burner, right? And he said, you know, you can play him 20, 25 snaps a man-to-man, but you can't play him 50 snaps a man-to-man. He said, let me give you Texas's coverage scheme in a nutshell. He said they're going to play man. They're going to play quarters with outside leverage, and good teams are going to double post and fade them to death. And he said, what happened against Oklahoma and Texas? I mean, Oklahoma and Washington.
Washington.
And he said in the preview, he said, now watch Michigan take away the fade ball. And that's exactly what happened. It was exactly what they did, right? And so he said he's going to be in a better scheme with better coaching at Michigan. That's understanding they've changed over defensively as far as the brain trust, but they have kept
back on radio in 30 guys.
They have kept the defensive coverage elements. It's just a matter of how much does Wink employ them, but all of them are still there. So he said just he will fare better if he goes to Michigan. So don't look at his point was don't look at the Texas tape and say Terrence Brooks is a total zero. He said it's coaching and scheming. I said, well, Vance, I said, man, the Texas coach is going to be pissed off. He said, tell him to call me.
Coming back on radio, guys. Stand by.
And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050, WTKA, online at WTK.com. I know we only have a few minutes left in the show, guys, and this what I'm about to ask you probably requires more time. We spent many a show talking about how, you know, pay to the student-athletes is on the horizon. It seems even closer given the order to settle. The judge wants the House versus the House versus the NCAA.
She
ordered that. He decides to, hey, go settle this. Assuming that happens, I think a casualty here is going to be their teams are going to cut, or programs, institutions are going to cut sports. Maybe not at Michigan, but I think sports across the country, at institutions like Rutgers and Maryland and Purdue, I think we're going to see mass cutting of sports as a consequence of this, of these payouts to student athletes. I wonder, do you guys agree with that? I'm trying to remember which athletic director or president it might have been. Maybe it was, I can't remember which school. It was a big school. It was an ESPN story. We said, yeah, we're absolutely going to have sports cut? Do you think that's going to be a mass sort of casualty event once we get to the point, which seems to be on the immediate horizon, of paying student athletes, of institutions paying student athletes?
Well, I think that that's something that athletic directors will be saying now, because they don't want to do it. And so it's like, oh, this is a consequence that's going to happen. But there can be no justification for any Big Ten school cutting a sport. Because if this cap is $20 million, what are you getting in the next contract? Right? You're getting vastly more than that. Like the whole point of expanding and superpowering all this stuff is so that you have all the money. And if the cap is really $20 million, that's less than 10% of Michigan's athletic revenue. And when you look at pro sports, you know, usually they're negotiating for something a little bit north of 50% of the overall revenue. You know, Ohio State brought in $250 million last year. They $20 million coming out of the bottom line should have absolutely no impact on their ability to sponsor student athletes. And what I would like to see Congress do is it, like, your salary cap should be linked to the number of sports you have. The number of people you have on scholarship should be related to how much you can pay. Because
how much you could pay or how much you have to pay?
You could pay. So like right now they're talking about like, okay, it's going to be a $20 million salary cap. It's going to be flat across all sports. If you have more student athletes, you should have a higher cap, and you don't have to spend it on the rowing team, but the rowing team is on scholarship. They're competing, and you as an institution should benefit from that. I don't believe in a flat cap. I believe the more sports you sponsor, the more money you should be able to funnel to your student athletes. Then there's absolutely no justification for any Big Ten, any SEC school for cutting a sport. Like maybe AAC teams, but there's probably not a whole lot of lower level Division I programs that aren't running close to the bone in terms of there's a minimum number of sports you have to sponsor to be a D1 program.
Yeah, and I think there's a threshold as well that you have to meet to be in these big conferences. So you got to be mindful of that cap. But I agree with you, Brian, that you know Michigan, Ohio State won't flinch. You know, they won't have to cut sports, but Rutgers, who's already struggling right now, Maryland, who said that Maryland's $100 million in debt? Ira, is that right? Their athletic department?
Probably
to the,
sounds
to the
right.
Big Ten?
Sounds about right.
So,
thank you, WL.
Maryland's been threatening to cut sports forever, and their next complaint, they haven't made it yet, but I'm sure they're going to make it, is that, like, now we got to fly our teams to Oregon and whatnot, right? Which is not going to make sense for the Big Ten. Given the amount of money that they're going to make off this new TV deal is more than the salary cap that they just installed on themselves. So after all of this and they're paying players to the budget, they're still going to be making more money than they were before. Maryland should not complain. Their budget's going to increase. The mid-majors are in trouble, and that's where Congress is. They're really asking
they're
for
not,
help.
They're not in trouble. This doesn't change anything for them. Because, like, Drake is not running 40 sports. Drake is running approximately 18 because that's the minimum for being a D1 school. And the option to get paid is an option.
No, I'm right? really talking about the teams that are trying to run Division I football programs and never should have made the move up in the first place. And there's a lot of them. And they're looking at, do we cut football or do we cut everything else? And because they've been using student fees to pay for their football program in the first place. It's not like they were making money, that the program was making that much money that they could cover all of their costs. They need that to be the front porch of the university to pay for everything else.
Okay, but
UCLA claimed they were $100 million in debt. Now, I don't know if it's true, but that's what UCLA claimed last year.
I mean, we don't have to take that seriously. Well, if you're $100 million in debt running an athletic department that doesn't pay its employees, what are we doing here? Mm-hmm. Like, I fundamentally do not care. And, like, honestly, if I was the commissioner of the Big Ten, I'm not. Like, any Big Ten school that cut a sport would just be, like, out. There's no justification for it. Now, I mean, UCLA brought in $100 million in revenue last year as part of the Pac-12. They're going to get a huge boost from that next year. If you can't pay 1/5 of your revenue to your student athletes when pro teams are spending 55-60% on their athletes, like, I just fundamentally don't buy it. Like, there's a level at which some sports at some universities that are just trying to get by are going to make, but those programs are already at the minimum to be a D1 school, and the marketing, it's a marketing expense for these universities. Central Florida, South Florida, Florida Atlantic, it's a marketing expense. Mm-hmm. And that's not going to change. I mean, they're already losing the players that want to go and get paid. That's going to continue to happen. Like, I just fundamentally do not believe that the people who are like, oh, this money's coming out of my pocket, are making genuine arguments.
I gotcha. I've gotten the wrap-up sign. I knew this was an unfair, you know, conversation throwing the last
guys,
nine
you have 4 minutes for a
yeah.
Right. So hey, we got, that's why we have other shows, right? Folks, appreciate you for coming on for the Imago Blower Roundtable. Always an absolute blast. If you're in the market for a new vehicle, be sure to get on board with Brighton Ford. We're going to BrightonFord.com. Call 1-800-NEW-4 to make it out to the lot at 8240 West Grand River Avenue in Brighton, Michigan. If you do, you can ride around in an F-150 like my man Devin Gardner, who got it from Brighton Ford, or Jaden Davis, who got his Brighton Ford, his F-150 from Brighton Ford. You can too. A 2023 F-150 XLT for $265 a month, $3,500 down. If you want to get into a 2024 where they got you with that as well, 2024 F-150 XLT, $285 a month with $3,500 down. For those and other great deals, get on board with Brighton Ford. Go to BrightonFord.com. Call 1-800-NEW-4 to make it out to the lot at 8240 West Grand River Avenue in Brighton, Michigan. We'll see you tomorrow here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050, WTK The Ticket, the official voice of University of Michigan Sports, Ann Arbor, a Cumulus station.